We're joined this morning by Gary John Bishop. He's a best-selling author, an internationally famous personal coach. He's written the book, Stop Doing That Bleep. I use that word for radio to protect my occupation here. And also he's written the best-selling book, Unbleep Yourself. And this one is End Self-Sabotage and Demand Your Life Back. Before I get into that, what's your fascination with curse words, Gary?
I don't have a particular fascination with them. I think, you know, I occasionally use them, and like Shakespeare, I'm fond of them. So, it's part of my approach to life, I guess.
And it's sort of sometimes when you bring those words up, it sort of cuts right to the bone in a sense. It doesn't get gets right to it.
Yeah, it can do. I mean, my books aren't filled with them, you know. Like, I think curse words are like the hot sauce of language, you know. If used sparingly, it can add a little bit of zest to the plate, but you should never overdo it.
One of the words you have a lot in this book is, and even on the top, about sabotage. Who are the saboteurs in our life?
Right. If you've ever noticed in your life, you know, like there are certain things that you say you want to go one way, but in fact, it seems to go another way. And so in the book, I start to uncover what is it that makes it do that? Like, how come I say I want to lose weight or save money or, you know, like change my career, and yet when it comes to it, it seems like I undo all the work that I do. And so in the book, I start to really dig into, like, what are we driven to do subconsciously? What does it prove? And it's kind of surprising when you look at it from a fresh perspective. Let's put it that way.
And when you start looking at some of these things, how do you bring the truth out? To ourselves, how do we talk truthfully to ourselves? Sometimes we're good at lying to ourselves more often.
Yeah.
I guess.
I think that's a great question. It's probably the hardest thing of all, because you know part of how we operate is, in many ways, we've kind of fooled ourselves. Right? It's almost like we're conning ourselves. Like, I say I really want it, but I'm not doing it. And so what I like to do is say, well, what if you say you really want it, but in fact you don't? Like, what if everything you're doing in life is part of the plan? What if it's designed to keep you in a consistent struggle for something, and that you temporarily overcome and then diminish and then overcome and then diminish over time? And then you're left with the real question is, well, what could I do instead? Which again, in the book, I really get people on a pathway for ending, and I mean ending, their propensity for self sabotage.
How do we know how do we know we're not doing the right thing, or how do we know that what we're doing is working? Or I guess maybe if we're reading this book, then there's indication somewhere that maybe we're not.
Well, yeah, I think, my view is that when you bring something in the light for yourself, you now have a choice. You have a choice of, like, now that I fully am aware of what this is and what it's really designed to do, I have a choice of doing that thing or not that thing. So it's really taking things that are more in our subconscious and bringing them into a cognitive, conscious range of thought and thinking, rather than just automatically doing some certain things, actually starting to understand them in a really profound way, and in such a way that inspires you to change your actions.
How do we get other people on board? But I think I've read some things related to that. You're thinking we are responsible for what happens. We can't blame everybody else for where we're fitting into their situation. We're putting ourselves there.
Right. It's very, look, life is challenging enough without trying to get other people to see it your way, right? It's challenging. It's challenging enough to get oneself to act in a new way, right? And part of that is because you live at this kind of crossroads between wanting new things but somehow wanting it to be predictable and safe. And, you know, anything new or any endeavor that's new usually requires some level of risk and uncertainty. And as human beings, we tend to be pretty averse to it, automatically at a very deep level, averse to risk and uncertainty, which not so much when you're young, but definitely as you get older, that thirst for certainty gets stronger and stronger.
And what causes that? I was wondering, when is there's that point when you're younger, you're jumping maybe from thing to thing or ideas or wants or needs, and then there's a point where you sort of settle into something, and I guess maybe just because it gets comfortable, you don't want to move out of that spot.
Right. I mean, you know, at a very primal level, we are fascinated by survival. And so you might not like your life, but you are surviving. So it takes care of that very primal need. You might not, like I said, you might not like it, but you are surviving. And in the book, I actually make this really compelling, like, argument for that the misery you're in is the one that you've settled on. Like, this is what I've decided I can survive. And I'm really up to inspiring people to break out of those cycles, because the greatest results of your life were when you were most exposed and most at risk.
So give us some ways to maybe break free of this. You know, what sort of a pattern do we need to take, or what some tips you can help us for that?
Yeah. Well, if you try on the idea that your self-sabotage is basically just an effort to reproduce the past and then survive it, right? So if you just take on the idea, and I know it doesn't always seem obvious, but if you take on, like, if you're struggling with money, or you're struggling with your weight, or you're struggling with your career, or you're struggling with a passion of yours, you're struggling in relationship after relationship, try on the idea that that's to keep you in a certain kind of cycle. And it's all based in your past. Now, you got to get all of that, like, worked out for yourself, obviously, on one hand. But on the other hand, you might ask yourself, well, if I could have any life, what would I be doing? Or what would my life be about? Then you have a real choice in the matter, like, moment to moment, day to day. Are you filling your life with perpetuating the past? Or, in fact, are you taking actions that are some blow for the freedom of your future? That is, am I doing things today that are more aligned with the future, or more aligned with perpetuating the past? And again, in the book, I talk you through the steps. Like, what does that actually look like to live a life of the future right now in the present?
How much is it of setting a goal or getting a direction? Tell me how that works. What's it exactly?
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of goals. They're just too flimsy. I don't think they're enough to get your teeth into. And, you know, the whole nature of a goal is, you know, you might hit it, you might not, you know. So my view is I'm much more interested in what you give yourself to. That is, what are you fully invested in? What have you promised? What have you said? What in your life have you said, this thing is happening, and I don't care what I need to do to make this happen, but this is going to happen, and I'm taking actions today that are consistent with that. So if, for instance, you want to take control of your body and have it look different, okay, and that might mean you're eating more, it might mean you're eating less, you would be looking at your life today and asking yourself, what am I doing today that's consistent with this body that I say I'm after? Like, what have I done today? And in that process, you'll experience resistance, you'll experience, you know, like, the familiar emotions of your past. I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. It's too much. It's not a good time. All of those familiar thoughts and experiences will be there. But those are the moments when you're most challenged, and those are the moments where the future has to be victorious over that past that you've been so committed to perpetuating.
Why does it seem when you are, I don't want to use that word, angry or enraged, or there's some other thing that's driving you, maybe it shuts down all those voices or those other thoughts, and you just go straight ahead and complete that task, and, you know, before you know it, it gets done, and you're not really even sure how it happened.
Right. I think that's really. So there's lots of different ways of doing it, but what you're saying is that there is a way of doing it, right? So what you're saying is, I don't necessarily have to have the life of my thoughts, right? Or what I would call my default thoughts, which tend to be my most repetitive baseline thinking, right? And it's not even thinking, really. It's mostly what I would call thoughting, right? So one of my baseline thoughts is, I'm not smart enough. Now, for 30-something years of my life, I lived that life. I lived the life of I'm not smart enough, right? Until at some point in my late 30s, I realized that that was a thought, right? Now, for 30-odd years, it wasn't just a thought. It was real. It was like I had that life. I didn't go to college. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I pursued this. I pursued that. All in alignment with I'm not smart enough. Now, that thought is still there for me, you know that I'm at the half-century mark of my life. It's still there for me that I'm not smart enough. The only difference is I don't deem it as some kind of guide for me. It's not something that I'm now prepared to honor. So what keeps me going is my commitment to fully expressing the whole of myself, not just the parts that I got stuck with.
We're talking today with Gary John Bishop. He is known sort of as an urban philosophy or a philosopher, I guess. That's just sort of a moniker put onto that. When you are encountering people or have helped people through and dealt with them, either through your books or whatever, what kind of feedback are you getting from them? And who are you seeing as your audience that really this is connecting with?
So one of the things that I love to do is take some of the most profound works that have ever been produced by people that are a lot smarter than I, like the Stoic philosophers or some existentialists. And I look at their work and what they said and find ways to say that to people in a way that cuts through what people are dealing with today. And what I've found is that people want a message that they can use, not just one that resonates or makes sense, which is fine, but does it actually compel them to act in new ways? Like, does what I'm reading here, does it compel me to put this book down, step up, and do something today that otherwise I would never do, or I would certainly, like, there wouldn't be a high probability of me doing it? And so what I found is this growing body of people who want some profundity, who want some, like, real foundational elements that they can use to quit that job, start that relationship, ask that person out, you know, like finally deal with themselves. And it's a whole range of people. It's people in all age groups, people, young people, and people more in my age group in that kind of 40s, 50s. And then people in their 60s and 70s, and even their 80s, who are really resonating with the simplicity and the depth of the message.
How does this help people, I guess, fit into society, into the world? In other words, does it make them, because they are not resentful, angry because of something? Because a lot of times the reason why we want to change is we're not too happy with it. Does it make them a happier person? Does it kind of have a ripple effect with that?
Well, that would be part of, you know, like the greater influence that one could get to have, right? I mean, if I've found a way to let go of my resentment, I become someone who isn't resentful in my family, or I become someone who isn't resentful at work. Everybody wants a piece of that action, right? Everybody wants a piece of, how do I let go of my resentments? How do I we all hear these things like, you know, you should forgive, but nobody, I mean, I haven't met many people who could talk you through how to actually do it. I know I should do it, but how do I do it? And so I've kind of tasked myself by giving people the tools to forgiveness and acceptance and power and responsibility and how to elevate yourself in life. And ultimately, to be someone that can actually influence and make a difference for others too.
The book is called Stop Doing That, Bleeps, End Self-Sabotage, and Demand Your Life Back. Is there a moment, if you're following through with these sort of things, where you see, explosions in your life, whether people are like, what have you done? What has become of you? Or, wow, it's amazing, you know, that kind of a thing. I wonder where that occurs along the timeline of this discovery.
It does. And part of that requires you to think as a reader, you know, because it's not just offered up to you in a play. There's a massive difference between information and awareness. I might know something, but it doesn't necessarily change me. And you know, that's one of my fascinations, is how to give somebody something in such a way that they change, right? And part of that methodology includes asking people questions, the kind of questions, though, that that cause them to think and penetrate below the shellac of what they've been left with. And yeah, it does cause, it sometimes causes these ripple effects in families, for instance, where somebody says, you know, I'm just no longer willing to be that person with you anymore, so I forgive you and I forgive myself for not forgiving you. And man, I mean, that's just like, no, everybody's like, what the heck? What's going on here? You know? But that's, again, that's the kind of work that I'm fascinated in. I'm interested in removing barriers and unleashing people's true self, not their worst self.
Maybe it could make us a better person, too, so we don't instill some of those little voices in other people, either our children or people that we see when we say a comment that we don't know that has maybe a little in effect. You know, we just throw it, and somehow it sticks to them, and it drills into them, and they have to deal with it then.
Yeah, there's two things to be responsible for. There's a lot of talk right now about being responsible for what you say, right? And there's a massive amount of truth in that, okay? You got to be responsible for what you say. You got to really think about what is the full impact of what I say. It also includes being responsible for how you listen. So that is, what am I doing with this statement or this comment that this person's making? What am I, you know, how am I, you, how, what am I making this mean, or how am I letting this impact me? So it's twofold. It's being responsible for what you say and the spectrum of what you say. And being responsible for how you listen. You know, you're listening to someone through a veil of cynicism or resentment or anger or distrust. And whatever veil you're listening through, you'll always hear evidence for that thing.
It's called Stop Doing That Bleep and Self-Sabotage and Demand Your Life Back. Gary John Bishop, our guest today. If people want to find out more about what you do, about this book, and, you know, stop doing it, where do they need to start doing it?
Yeah. So you can find me at any great bookstore, and probably a few crummy ones too, although I don't know if there is such a thing as a crummy bookstore. But anyway, and you can find me on Amazon. Also, of the audio version of my books, which I narrate myself. You can find me more information about me and what I do and my blog and stuff on my website, GaryJohnBishop.com, or on Instagram, at GaryJohnBishop, on Twitter, at GaryJohnBishop. You can find me on Facebook. I got over 250,000 followers there. And I'm committed to giving people really solid and great nuggets of information. Whether you buy the book or you don't, you'll get access to it all online.
Now, I'm looking at the cover, and they got the back of a shirt of a guy with the big thing on it, and I see the different tattoos kind of that reflect maybe in the book. I was wondering, right. do you have tattoos yourself?
Oh, I have a couple. I'm not crazy about them.
I just wondered if any of them inspire you, or those ones that you kind of use as a touchstone at all?
No, a part of why we did that is because I wanted people to get with some of those internalized sentences. Are like tattoos, like once they're there, right? But how do I live with them? How do I live with some of those internalized sentences, like stuff like I'm not good enough or I'm not loved, or how does one forge a life given that that's in the background for oneself?
Sort of shows the internal on the external just to see what those people are dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Gary John Bishop, our guest today. We appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for sharing the details. Great.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.